Good morning, everyone, and I will call the Thursday, September 22nd meeting of the Senate Interim Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments to order. And since this is our first meeting of the interim, we do need to organize ourselves. Some people say the legislature organizing itself is an oxymoron, but in this committee, we believe that we can do it quite well. So we're going to start by adopting our rules, and members, you should have in front of you a copy of the Senate interim rules for rules and executive appointments. They're basically the rules that we have operated under previously with a slight modification to rule number 6, which doesn't have much applicability to this committee, but deals with ways of keeping records if meetings take place outside of the Capitol. Senator Farioli, did you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we adopt the proposed committee rules dated September 22nd, 2011.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Farioli has moved that we adopt the proposed committee rules dated September 22nd. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we have a full complement of people waiting to tell us about various appointments. And I think before we do that, so that since we have some people who may not have been in the Capitol before, I'll just briefly describe how we do this and let the members briefly introduce themselves. So what we are here to do is hear from each of you about briefly your background and experience and why you're interested in serving on the particular board that the governor has appointed you to. And then occasionally members might have questions for you. We do have a lot of people to talk to and some big boards to confirm, so we will call people up in groups, usually in groups when you're from the same board. We do have a couple of people who are going to be joining us from, in some cases, overseas by telephone, so we take those and fit them into the schedule, too. So that's what we do, and hopefully, if you've done this before, you will know that it goes very smoothly, and if you haven't, you'll know that we don't bite, we're friendly. We are really very, very excited that such a group of committed and qualified people are interested in serving the state of Oregon. So starting with Senator Beyer, would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Senator Lee Beyer. I represent the Lane and Central Linn County areas.
Senator Ted Farioli. I represent District 30, which is all a part of 12 counties currently, 34,000 square miles, going to 36,000 square miles after the redistricting plan is adopted. I am the senior member of the Senate.
You are not.
Oh, yes, I am.
we'll have equal time here. And I'm Senator Diane Rosenbaum, chair of this committee, and I represent Southeast and Northeast Portland and Milwaukee in Clackamas County, and soon a little more of Clackamas County, including Oak Grove.
I'm Senator Jason Atkinson. I represent District 2, a big portion of Southern Oregon, and after redistricting, I still live in the same house. And that's good. And I'm curious to know the seniority rank, because I think I'm 4, and you're 3, and he's 2, and Peter's 1.
Ginny, both of us.
I'm Ginny Burdick, and I represent the people of Senate District 18. And I came to the Senate the same year as Senator Farioli, but my name begins with B, so I'm on top of the seniority.
Great. Well, thanks, everybody. Now that we've cleared that up, we can move ahead. And just in terms of the process, we will hear from everybody. We won't act on these appointments until at the end of the hearing in the form of a motion. So we'll start with, I guess, we're going here first, mm-hmm. Right?
Okay. And we have Mary on the phone.
Okay. So first, I will open a public hearing on the appointments of Richard Alexander, Julia Brim Edwards, Yvonne Curtis, Matthew Donegan, Dr. Samuel Henry, Nicole Maher, don't all come forward, please, Dr. Mark Mulvihill, David Reeves, Ron Saxton, Dr. Mary Splilda, Kate Turan, and Joanna Vandering to the Oregon Education Investment Board. And in this very large group, we do have two people who will be joining us by telephone. So first, if Mike... Right, sounds like we're, is this Dr. Spilda?
Yes, it is, Mary Spilda.
Thank you, Mary. And this is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum. I'm sitting here with the Senate Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments, and we've just introduced the nominees for the Oregon Education Investment Board. So if you could just very briefly tell us a little bit about your background and your interest in serving on this new board, that would be great.
Great. Well, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Spilde, president of Lane Community College. And I appreciate your indulgence in allowing me to join by phone this morning so that I could participate in Eugene and our the one day in the year when all of our 1,500 faculty and staff can come together at our all-staff convocation, which is going on as I'm speaking. So three quick points regarding my interest and what I would bring to this effort. First of all, I've been working for the last 8 months on the governor's agenda for 0 to 20 early learning and education transformation, first serving as co-chair of the post-secondary transition team and then on the Oregon Education Investment Team. And I'm deeply committed to change in Oregon's approach to education, moving towards improved results and investments that are made on the basis of clear outcomes. Secondly, I've been leading change at Lane Community College for the last 10 years, and I think I understand what it takes to actually move organizations on the ground and the challenges presented in creating conditions where faculty and staff can engage in real change. And I would bring, I think, this knowledge to the board as a practitioner, but also with a commitment to change and not just as a protector of the status quo. And then lastly, the last 5 years I've served on national boards, the American Association of Community Colleges and the Association of American Colleges and Universities, and was recently appointed to the National 21st Century Commission on the Future of Community Colleges. And all of these organizations are working on a very similar agenda. And I've been able to connect with senior leaders in the U.S. Department of Education and at private philanthropic foundations that are focused on this agenda. And so I think my working knowledge of the research, the players, and what other states have tried may be helpful to the work of the board. And so it's with these three points I thank you for the opportunity to be nominated for service to the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your willingness to serve. Any questions for this individual? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes, Senator Ferrioli, please.
Madam Chair, I believe that Mary will remember a luncheon that she invested in her time in with a young lady who was in a nursing program or about to enter one, which encouraged her to go ahead and complete her nursing degree and become a registered nurse. And that young girl was my daughter. And I wanted to let Mary know that she is a successful practitioner in practice in Springfield.
Great. Thank you for that comment. So I don't see any other questions for you, Dr. So I will let you get back to your convocation. And thank you very much for bringing such an incredible background to the work of this board.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee.
Great. Take care. Hello, is this Matthew Donegan?
This is Matt Donegan.
Hi, Matt Donegan. This is Dianne Rosenbaum. I'm the chair of the Senate Executive Appointments Committee, and we're sitting here in Salem, and I think you are in China. So we're very glad that whatever time it is there, you've been able to join us. And we have just opened up a hearing on the governor's nominees to the Oregon Education Investment Board. So we would love to hear from you just briefly about your background and your interest in serving on this commission.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be joining you about midnight here in Shanghai. In terms of my background, I'll just draw your attention to two elements. One is I am a business owner and a business executive. I'm co-president and co-founder Forest Capital Partners. It's a group that I started back in Boston and relocated to Portland about 6 years ago. We're in the forestry and investment business. And the second piece of my background that I draw your attention to is community service and volunteer work that I've done, including in the education arena. I'm president of the Oregon State Board of Higher Education. I currently serve on the Oregon Education Investment Team. And I recently stepped down after several years serving on the Oregon Innovation Council. So I have a background both in education and in research. And I serve on a number of other organizations in Oregon as well. So only been in Oregon about 6 years, but had the opportunity to get pretty involved in a short amount of time. In terms of my interests, the general interest is that I'm just a very strong believer in public education. I'm a graduate myself of two public universities, and we employ several graduates of public universities, including many Oregon universities. And so we've got a very vested stake and just a long time interest in educational excellence, particularly in the state of Oregon. With regard to the investment board, I'm just very intrigued and very committed to the governor's vision with regard to forming this board and improving education services and really making the most of our limited resources in the state, particularly with regard to focusing on early early learning and as well as just the whole continuum from early learning on all the way through college and better integrating that. I guess I would also add that I think with all the transition and work that this will create, I think my role on the Board of Higher Education is just going to be really important in terms of helping to facilitate that transition and just making sure all the pieces fit together.
Great. Well, thank you very much for that information and your willingness to serve. Are there any questions for Mr. Dunnigan? Okay, well, I think you've answered all of our questions, and once again, we really appreciate you joining us so late at night, so I'll say good night from Oregon, and we look forward to seeing you in person in the near future back here.
Okay, hey, thanks for the call.
Sure, take care. Okay, so next we're going to call people in groups. So we've got a pretty big group, and I'll start in alphabetical order with Richard Alexander, Julia Brim Edwards, and Yvonne Curtis, if you'd all like to come forward.
Maybe this is the downside of being the B.
There are very few of them.
You could be the E, but
she get an option with a hyphen.
That's right. So I think you heard that we'd like to hear from you a little bit about your background and your interest in serving on the Education Investment Board.
First, we'll go alphabetically. My name is Dick Alexander. Madam Chairman and members, thank you for the opportunity to come down today and talk a little bit about education. My background is I'm a manufacturer. I'm an investor today. I have had a long-standing commitment to the quality of education in Oregon. I can remember going back and testifying in favor of 3565 many years ago. But I think that as far as background is concerned, I've served as president of the board of Oregon Episcopal School for 4 years, and was on the board for 8. I'm currently on the board of Merrill Hirsch University and vice chair of that board. And I'm very interested in early childhood education and have been active in advocating for that. I think that, and I see that through the prism of the other experience I've had through the prism of college entry, qualifications of students for high school, dropout rates, et cetera. But my real interest was peaked when I was on the Crime Commission in Portland, and we decided to do a study to determine why so many young people were being incarcerated. And we found out that the basic reason, after a nine-month study, we published what's called a kids report that said that the main way you reduce dropouts and reduce early crime is through early childhood education, which leads to greater attendance in high school and completion of the program, et cetera. So I come with that experience. I've been very active as an advocate for education, and I'll answer any questions you have.
Great, thank you. I think we'll hear from everybody and then open it up for questions.
Okay.
Go ahead. Good morning. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. I'm Julia Brim Edwards from Portland. I appreciate the committee's consideration of my nomination. Just a brief overview of some relevant professional or volunteer experience I've had. I'll bring a background of public policy. I've worked for the Oregon Legislature, both for a member on the east side of the mountains and a member on the west. I also worked for the U.S. Senate for 7 years in Washington, D.C. I'll bring, perhaps most relevant to this particular board, a background in public education policy. I served for 4 years as both member and a co-chair of the Portland School Board. I'm also a member of the OSBA, or Oregon School Boards Association, statewide board. Served on the Oregon Child Care Commission, my local school site council, and a host of other committees and commissions and task forces over the years. My current role at Nike, I cover all the United States at a state and local level, so have a perspective of policy and innovations in the policy arena that are happening across the U.S. I think it's worth noting that I'm a product of the Oregon public education system. I'm a graduate of Washington Monroe High School and Oregon State University, just to give a little balance up at that campus in Washington County. And I'll bring, I think, most relevant to the work on the board, if confirmed, sort of three lenses. One is a parent. I've got three kids. They've been in public and private school. They've been in a Title I school. They've been in neighborhood schools, focus schools. So I'll bring that sort of parent lens to the work. Second, having served as a board member during the recession in the early 2000s and as No Child Left Behind was being rolled out, I've seen how state systems can either support or not the work that's happening in the classroom, and I think that will, that sort of grassroots and sort of local district experience would be useful to the board's work. And then third, working for a company that operates in 150 countries in a very competitive industry that's constantly focused on innovation, I think I can bring a perspective of what skills and expertise are needed in the workforce in a global economy. And probably in a most importantly, what I'm going to bring is a passion for kids and public education. I think it's the future of our state and our economic success, and hopefully I can provide some of my experience to support the work that's happening at the state and that you all have started this last legislative session. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Curtis?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators, for this opportunity. My name is Yvonne Curtis. I'm Superintendent Forest Grove School District, live in Forest Grove in Washington County. And I just want to share with you that first I bring to this work, as well as all my work in education, the passion of ensuring that all children can think and live well in the 21st century. I bring 30 years of experience in education, 22 of those years in this state. For half of that time I was a teacher. I've taught at grades K through 6, every grade long enough to know the skills that kids need to know and what they need to be able to do, as well as how children learn and what their learning styles bring at different ages. I've worked the other half of that time as an administrator. I've worked in 5 different school districts in several regions. I was in a very small school district in Madras, Oregon. I was in Bend, Redmond as a principal. Then I moved to Eugene as a director for 5 years, and now in Forest Grove as a superintendent in the western metro area. During that time, I was able to see how schools operate in the multiple regions across our state, also serving diverse populations, and every one of those districts were very different. I bring some experience and the lens of how policy and budget decisions impact not only at a district level, but also down to the classroom level. I served on the Quality Education Commission for 9 years, and what I think I brought to that commission was the ability to take some of the decisions that we were making on that commission down to being able to tell stories and give the picture of what that really creates in a classroom for individual students and what it creates for the teacher. I bring to the committee a knowledge of what happens when things are aligned and the amazing growth in learning that happens when our system is aligned and when we're aware of what those barriers are for students and we find ways to take those barriers away. I also bring experience in a proficiency model. Forest Grove High School is completely proficiency-based. All the courses are aligned with common assessments. We've moved that proficiency model down to the middle level, so from grade 7 to 9, we're completely proficiency-based. We're also a school district that's beating the odds. We have high levels of poverty rate in our district. 50% of our community is Latino, high levels of English language learners, and we're graduating more Latino and second language students than we are our Caucasian students. So we have clearly closed the achievement gap. With that, we also bring the experience of what happens when you provide adequate support for students, you communicate high expectations and an expectation that they will go to college and be successful, and what happens when you turn intervention models into acceleration models. I bring a special interest to the committee of ensuring that the decisions that are made will help our ELL students, our students of poverty, students with special needs, because I think one of the things that's really important in this work is ensuring that any decision that's made is not going to create additional barriers or unintended consequences, which I've seen oftentimes happen in our policy and budget decisions. And last, I just would like to say that I am honored at this opportunity to serve on a committee that's going to have the responsibility for such very important decisions. I truly believe that public education is the bedrock of our democracy, and I believe the only way we're going to figure out how to take the barriers out for every student is by working collaboratively with the multiple talents we will have on this particular board. Thank you to all of you for this opportunity.
Well, thanks to the three of you. I think you well represent, just as the first handful of people, the diversity of appointments to this board, and it's pretty remarkable the depth of experience and the breadth of wisdom. So any questions for these good folks? Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Could either of the three of you please describe for us what the vision is for this board?
Hi. You want me to go ahead? So as laid out in Senate Bill 909, we have a specific set of duties in terms of alignment, creating a unified 0 to 20 system that is aligned and integrated and producing better outcomes for our kids when they move through our public education system. And there's a series of timelines and deliverables back to the legislature in terms of recommendations on the system alignment.
I would just add that I think the work is intended to be very intentional about what proficiency is and should be at every level from early childhood all the way through the system, because one of the challenges we have had in public education is that we haven't ensured that early on so that we knew kids were on track from the very beginning, and that's the benefit of having it aligned.
Go ahead.
We had a commission that was created politically in the 1990s called, I forget what the commission was called, but it was the Quality Education Model, essentially. And the recommendation that the Quality Education committee members, board members, always came back with was, you evil legislature, you're not spending enough on education. And since the time that that was started till today, education spending has gone up close to $1 billion. Some people are concerned that that's what this commission is going to be, is just another complaint vehicle against the legislature. Do you see it that way?
I don't see it that way. So I don't see that that's our charge. And I think that would be misdirected in our purpose if that's the goal that we went out of here with, if we're confirmed. I think it's an honest effort on the part of the governor to change the direction of education in Oregon. I think it's sincere in the belief that it can be, and I share that belief that it can be changed. We have to find a way to make better progress with limited funds, and it won't happen overnight. One concern I have on the part of the legislature is unrealistic expectations. It's going to take time to make this work, and we're going to be fairly patient about it. But I'm not going to be an advocate just for more money. If I think that's the only thing that would address the need in some instance, I probably would be. But that's not my goal.
So just to speak to that, I view it much more as a partnership between the board, the legislative branch, the executive branch, and all the teachers and principals and parents out in the broader state, because without any of those pieces working together as part of an integrated whole, we're not going to be able to make changes in the public education system. So I think a partnership is essential for us to be successful as a state and for the board to be successful.
I agree with that.
Any other questions? Great. Thank you very much for your willingness to serve. And next, I'll call Dr. Samuel Henry, Nicole Marr, and Dr. Mark Mulvihill. Welcome to the Committee on Rules, and we're very glad to have you here today to hear about your background and your interest in serving on the Education Investment Board. So whichever of you would like to go first, please go ahead.
Well, if we'll go alphabetically, Senator Rosenbaum. Good morning, Senator Rosenbaum, members of the committee. It's September, and I'm back before you again. I'm not sure if this is an annual pilgrimage or what. I was before this August group last September as you gave me your nod and sent me forward to full Senate recommendation for the Oregon School Board. I am a member of the Oregon School Board. I am also the past chair of the Commission on Children and Families, which some of you may remember. I am also, in my day job, a faculty member at Portland State in the Graduate School of Education. I teach courses in culture, contact, curriculum, and policy in education. On behalf of my parents, Reverend Dudley Henry and Shangerine Henry, and grandparents who represent blacks who descended from slavery, Native Americans, Irish immigrants, and black immigrants from the Caribbean, all of those experiences come to bear, as you've seen from the information that you have. I have worked extensively in education over the last 42 years with a range from the little kids at 3 years old to doctoral level education, which is where most of my involvement is. I'm also representing the experience of dozens of mentors over the years who have invested in me, and in response to Senator Atkinson's pre-question, I would say that part of what I bring and what my colleagues bring, aside from being able to play in the same sandbox with each other and to work together, is the special abilities that we have in insights and perspectives, which I see as a very valued piece of what we're going to do. But again, I believe we're here to work with each other and to work on Senate Bill 909 and to not prejudge. And sometimes we may have to say back to you, this looks like something that needs more examination. So I just want you to know that I reserve the right for that. I'm pleased to be here because I know that a lot of people see change as a threat, and others see, well, let's face it, in the I've been here since 1992, and we've occasionally had reform fatigue. And this is designed to be something other than that. This is designed to be a really cohesive and collective attempt to do something for our kids, for our college bound, for our college and our university, for all the students and citizens of the state of Oregon. I think we have the promise of redirecting our resources, of mobilizing both human and social capital, and focusing our leadership in multiple and diverse communities. The need is great. The task is momentous. The time is right. Our children, youth, and all citizens deserve our best, which I pledge. At this time, I submit myself to any of your questions.
Thank you, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair Rosenbaum and Honorable Committee. My name is Nicole Maher, and I serve as the Executive Director for the Native American Youth and Family Center located in the Portland metro region. I'm also an enrolled member of the Tlingit and Haida tribes from Southeast Alaska, and I'm a proud product of the Oregon public education system, going to grade school, middle school, and high school on the Siletz Indian Reservation. I'm a graduate of Oregon State University as well as Portland State University and Oregon Health Sciences University. So I'm pleased to be here today. For the past 10 years serving the Native American Youth and Family Center, I've had the unique opportunity to be part of a truly successful movement on our community's behalf. We are proud to provide wraparound education and social services to the urban community of Portland. And 5 years ago, we embarked on a unique journey in deep partnership with the five local school districts to start a Native American-focused high school. And today we're proud to celebrate the highest Native American graduation rate in the state of Oregon, graduating 88% of our students. And our last two graduating high school senior classes had a 100% attendance to higher education, and I'm proud to say that they're still in school. And so with that experience, I bring to this work a deep passion and a deep belief that all students can succeed and that students want to be part of something successful and are willing and committed to seeing that success given the right supports. Additionally, I have a deep passion around equity. With the changing demographics in the state of Oregon, I am increasingly aware that this entire state's economy and future is dependent on the success of all students. And as our demographics change, I believe it's critically important that all Oregonians see our collective success connected to one another, and I hope to bring that perspective to this particular committee. Lastly, I'll just share how urgent this issue is to me. I currently live in North Portland and live in the Portland Public School District, and as a parent of two very young children, this issue is very urgent. The district that my children will attend has a graduation rate that 3 out of every 10 Native American students will graduate over a 4-year period, and 1 out of every 10 Native American boys will graduate over a 4-year period, and I have a 3-year-old son, and my daughter will be 2 next month, and so this issue is very, very urgent, and I'm very honored to be considered for this committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to meet with the group. I'm Mark Mulvihill. I'm the superintendent of Intermountain ESD in Pendleton, and I would be remiss, Senator Farioli, if I didn't say congratulations to daughter. Let her know her middle school principal's right behind her.
Yeah.
I've been in education for 25 years. My entire career has been in Eastern Oregon. I think I represent a voice of rural education. I've been pretty traditional career as far as if you look at traditional tracks, that would be me, teacher, coach, principal, right up to superintendent right now for the ESD. We recently completed a successful merger in which we merged with Union Baker ESD. I think that's an example of the change, an example of the types of things we need to do in Oregon to increase efficiencies. Right now, our ESD serves over 24,000 students in a 4-county geographic area. I put a lot of miles on my car coming to Salem. I'm on several committees and over the last several years, including the Race to the Top application, where I chaired the low-performing schools group, and we looked at some of your data that we need that certainly builds a case that we need to do better for our kids, particularly our kids of poverty, our kids of color. I also serve and currently serving on the Quality Ed Commission, and recently I worked with several of the members in the room as well on the LearnWorks group this last August, in which we had the task, and it was right kind of along the line, Senator Atkinson, of what you were saying, is how can we develop an outcome-based budget model built upon proficiency, as Yvonne mentioned as well, to give a running start to the investment board. And so that was quite a process, and I think some very innovative thinking went along there. So I've had quite a bit of experience working at the state level with those organizations as well as the regional level. I'm very excited about this opportunity to serve on the investment board because I think we have an unprecedented opportunity in front of us. We need to take advantage of the financial situation, because if we didn't have that financial situation, we probably wouldn't be having such an sense of urgency for change. We also have a governor that's very committed to the 40-40-20, and we also have models of excellence all around the state, and I see it as our job to scale up those efforts so that we're serving all of our kids across the state of Oregon with more equity than we have right now. I've been an early initiator on several initiatives at the local level. Our ESD is very active in developing pre-K programs and eliminating silos between the entities, and we're also working right now in an innovative program right now to integrate the senior year of high school into the freshman year of college with the Oregon Transfer Module. It's a cooperative effort between Intermountain ESD, our 21 school districts, Eastern Oregon University, Blue Mountain, and Treasure Valley Community College that we're pretty excited about, and we've received support from the state board and the governor's office for that. So I'm very passionate for change. I think right now our education system is doing a great, great job for kids like mine that can graduate with 2 years done, heading off to U of O. I was kind of disappointed to hear Mary say that it's a packed house down there because I'm driving into it after this. But we're doing a great job if you have strong parent advocates. But for our kids in poverty, our kids of color that don't necessarily have advocacy or connections, we have to do a better job of getting them connected. And the key of the 40-40-20 that I see, if we're going to get kids into college, we need to get them into college while they're in high school. So I'm excited about it. I appreciate the opportunity, and would open it up to any questions.
Great. Thank you all. Any questions for these folks?
A question for Ms. Mulvihill. What percentage of the kids that you are working with in Northeast Oregon are headed toward any form of higher ed after they graduate?
We ran our statistics for the 40-40-20. Blue Mountain Community College ran that. And right now, to give you an idea, if we're 40 for the bachelors, we're probably in the right around 20%, higher than we thought we would be. For the AA, the next 40, we're down around 15%. And then high school diplomas, around 80 in the region. So we have quite a big work to do if we're going to reach those proficiency levels of the 40-40-20 goal. It's an ambitious goal, but at the same time, when you set the bar high, we can get there.
That was it, Senator?
Well, Madam Chairman, well into the last century, when I graduated from high school, we had a third of the students would drop out during that four-year period, and only about a third of that graduating group would be headed toward any form of higher ed. And we have not really progressed beyond those basic averages, and that's over a 45-year period. So, the work of this committee is critically important.
Yeah, we've created a lot of silos that are very, very hard to navigate through. And if you have strong advocacy, you can do that. What we have to do is we have to break down that silos and access for all of our kids.
Thank you. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious if you have any professional judgment about why that is. I mean, why so few moving on to at least a community college, AA, or on to higher ed? Is it economic?
How long do I have? Yes, that would be one factor. I'll give you a very, very typical scenario of a, quote, average kid who's in our system. freshman and sophomore year, they have a full 7-8-period day, Algebra 1, full course load. Starting their junior and senior year, they start tapering off, and their senior year is probably the least academic year of a high school, of a public school student's career, usually a half day. And so when they're ready to enter college, they don't have the prerequisite skills. They can't test into, for instance, Math 111, which is college algebra. So they need to take a remedial course in the fall, Math 60, which basically is the high school sophomore level class, but they get the privilege of paying tuition for it. Then what happens over time is there are so many hurdles for kids to meet because they haven't had the skill set entering that. Especially the senior year, our expectations of that we've created a lot of remedial along the way, and that forces people out of the system when they keep experiencing failure for that, and then comes the economic cost. If you're an incoming freshman and all you're taking is remedial classes at a community college that don't count to your AA degree, very quickly you start losing hope. And when you look at kids in poverty, that accentuates the problem. And so really what we have to do is we have to put kids in college while they're in high school. That senior year needs to be much more academic, much more rigorous, much more filled with college-level work for all kids and those expectations. And high schools across the country that have done that have seen that kids meet that, staff meets that. And so it's a combination of a lot of things. I think economics is definitely one, but I also think the culture and the silos get in the way of kids moving forward.
I guess part of it is how, you know, one of the concerns that I hope you'll get to as part of this group is how did they get to the senior year and not have that proficiency?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just to add and underscore what my colleague just said, we need to change the narrative about what it means to be successful. We need to change the narrative about the importance of going on beyond high school, and we need to change the whole dialogue about which focus backward, that my grandparents were able to drop out of high school and get a good job and work in a mill or in the fishing industry or in other kinds of occupations that were available 35 years ago, and were able to support their family on that. And that's not one of the narratives that we've impacted successfully yet.
Thank you, and that was Dr. Henry, just so that our record is clear. I don't see any other questions. I just had one briefly, and then I'll call on you, Senator Atkinson. So, Dr. Henry, obviously you deal somewhat in your professional work with future teachers, and we hear a lot about the challenges of the young best and brightest of our folks that go into education and then can't get a job in Oregon because the jobs just aren't there. I assume that's a problem that isn't immediately got a solution in front of it. But I wonder what you're seeing in terms of our ability to train and then retain the exact people that we need to make our schools and our kids successful.
Chair Rosenbaum, that is very accurately one of the 800-pound gorillas in the room. My fear is that the ones that we have educated in the last several years who haven't been able to find a job, the best and the brightest, will be looking to other careers. And my fear is that the, for example, the young women that we worked on a lot to go into STEM careers and to teach math and science starting in the elementary schools will be swept away by some of my other colleagues in private industry. My fear is that as the, if you'll pardon me, but old farts like me haven't retired. I'm just 63. But we've created this space where younger people who come along and know a lot more than we do and can help change things in the ways that we need just haven't had the opportunity to do that. And so that is one of my fears. One of my fears, too, is that we haven't had the kind of conversations that I'm hoping we will have about what do we do to improve the teaching working force, because that's an issue that sits there. We need to have the conversations about how to support people becoming good teachers, because all of our good research shows that it takes about 5 or 6 years to become a good teacher. So there's some pieces in here that I'm hoping with the work that was done during the summer and with the work that we aim to do, there'll be some real conversations that'll make make the whole process one in which we can get the best out of what we have.
Senator, can I?
Yes,
please. Respond as well. This one's kind of near and dear to me. I did my dissertation on this, on teacher attrition, and right now over 50% of teachers don't make it to their sixth year. They're out before then. And if they're working in a high poverty district, the statistics are even higher. And what we did during, just what you alluded to, I appreciate that, this summer was a lot of our work was how are we going to get those resources in the classroom, and resources, not just money, but time and support, mentorship. Those are the keys of building collaborative communities. Yvonne mentioned that as well. We have got to look at how we support our teachers in the classroom differently, or we're going to, not only are the ones who can't get jobs, how are we going to retain the ones that are in it?
Thank you. Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. For the first time in close to 20 years, the last legislature passed the K-12 budget first rather than last. It took 9 years of guilt and persuasion to make that happen. And most, the biggest obstacles to making that happen were in the building from the professional side, and in the building from the policymakers' decision that it wouldn't make that big a difference. I share a different view that it made a huge difference. Do you have any opinion on that as it relates to your job on this board?
On the timing of the budget?
Yes.
I think it definitely helped in that people could plan accordingly. And if it could possibly align with the regular budget process, then that obviously is a plus. The feedback I received from the superintendents was knowing early was very much appreciated because they could build it into their normal budget process rather than reacting after the fact in the summer. Is that what your question was?
Yes, but I just to build on that, I'm afraid that it was a one-time only thing, and that we've done it, and next time we're going to get back to the politics. So here's how the politics works. Governor comes out and he says he's pro-education. It's been this way for 30 years, and which is great, and everybody stands and cheers the State of the State address. And then the first revenue forecast comes out, and everybody on the professional lobby side says and panics and says, we can't possibly make the biggest budget. Now we've got to wait till the very last May forecast for us to pass the budget. The entire time the legislature is burning money, spending money, spending money, spending money. The revenue forecast comes out in March and they say, wait, wait, wait. We burn money, burn money, burn money. Comes down to February and then it's a spending crisis. We're going to have to raise taxes. We're going to have to cut teachers. It's all the Republicans' fault. None of that's honest. It's completely dishonest, and that's how we do it. No one ever says it's not dishonest except me, because I think it's very partisan and kind of cheap. But at the end, kids are discounted, in my opinion. Education funding goes up, and state school districts all around, especially in rural Oregon, are guessing. Some people guess high, some guess low. Regardless of how they guess, it's seen as a cut and a partisan divide. So now we're going to have another commission who's going to come tell the legislature everything it's not doing right. So I'm just very curious to know. Is this going to be part of your discussion or not about the timing, or is this just something that was we do every 20 years and isn't that important to you?
Well, the governor's, I'm sorry. No. The governor's called out a different way of looking at it, and that budgeting is going to be built upon outcomes and product. That's, to me, is a completely different conversation. Right now in K-12, we receive our dollars by numbers and weights on kids. There's no advantage really not to identify a lot of ELL kids, for instance. In fact, there's a disadvantage. And if your enrollment's going down, you're losing in the game. And I think what I understand through this with the 0-20 alignment and outcome-based budgeting is that we're going to look at the use of dollars differently. We're going to try to eliminate silos. We're going to try to eliminate just seat time. It's built upon proficiency model and delivering on outcomes. And one of our first tasks is developing a data system statewide data system to determine those outcomes.
Madam Chair and briefly. Senator Atkinson, I would totally agree with that. I also agree with Senator Atkinson's appraisal that that the change, although it's taken quite a while, has been a very healthy change. I would support my colleague in hopes that this becomes a more ingrained part of the policy direction. It is one in which the members of this committee and the Senate are going to have to take the lead on in terms of helping work work with their colleagues to focus, because it is a change. When I teach the policy course, I have one of my former colleagues come and give a four-hour lecture on how the legislature makes the budget. It is at times one to pull hair out and cry over, and at other times almost short of wizardry. We would, I think most of us, as my colleague has reported, really appreciate clarity and would really appreciate the kinds of signals that you sent in the last session about how you want to proceed and what you need to do. I think as we look at some other states around, I've named Colorado, North Carolina, and I could name about five other states, they're seeming to have the same kind of direction, sir.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and thank you all for your willingness to serve. We have four people from this board, so I'll call them all together, and I don't know if we can pull up an extra chair or just one of you can sit in the front row. So I'll call David Reeves, Ron Saxton, Kay Turan, and Joanna Vandering. If you'd all like to come forward, please. Good morning, and welcome to the Senate Rules and Executive Appointments. And I think by now, listening to all these other good folks, you know what we want to hear. So whichever of you would like to go first, please go ahead.
Well, shall we remain alphabetical then?
That's great.
It requires me to remember everyone's name.
There's an awkward R-S-T. Silence, Madam Chair.
It's a litmus test for this board.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the Senate Rules Committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. My name's David Reeves. I'm honored to be nominated by the governor to the Oregon Education Investment Board. I'd like to tell you why this is an honor. So please let me talk a little bit first about my students, then a little about my background, and finally the opportunity this presents for the state. First, I've been a teacher for over 20 years. The last 15 years I've taught at Portland Community College. I teach English as a second language. Let me tell you a little bit about my students. They want to improve their English language skills to succeed in the workplace, in the community, and in future education. They come from all ages and backgrounds. It's really rewarding to work with these learners. You know, they're extremely motivated. And I think as some of the other speakers have mentioned earlier, the 0 through 20 system will work to coordinate transitions as learners navigate the various hurdles, you know, between the various stages of learning from 0 to 20. And I'd like to share the experience of working at a community college with learners who are making transitions, very big transitions, to a new culture, to new jobs, and new opportunities. Next, a little over my background. I grew up, I live near Beaverton. I'm a constituent of Senator Hass. I serve as community college faculty advisor to the State Board of Education. And I'm the elected president of the American Federation of Teachers Oregon. Nationally and in Oregon, AFT has been very involved in the discussion and research about innovations in education. And I look forward to exploring best practices in the education profession as we move forward. Finally, during the legislative session, AFT Oregon worked with legislators on Senate Bill 909, and we want to see it succeed. In order to be successful in any changes, we have to get educators, parents, students, and community members involved. A lot of teachers and other educators have shared their ideas with me, and I'd like to bring their experiences to the board. The education professionals in this state want to improve opportunities and success for every student, and I look forward for this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Saxton.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, rest of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Ron Saxton. I spend my time split between Portland and Klamath Falls. And say, take the opportunity to say, I work for Geldwin, and you shouldn't believe everything you read in the press. We're going to do fine. I worked in this building, actually, as staff before the room we're meeting in was even built. And so I've, you know, worked around here a long time in different capacities, and I've worked on education issues. I was trying to think, it's probably 25 years, going back to when I started serving on different things. Really relevant to this exercise is when the governor was elected, he called and asked if I would work with him to co-chair a transition effort with a goal that we would come up with something that was different, that the current plan, the status quo, doesn't work for students, doesn't work for taxpayers, doesn't work for the people who work in the system, and that we needed to find a way to approach this differently, and we needed to do it in a way that was really nonpartisan and that was, you know, very broad-based. And so I agreed to assist with that through the transition. I think we made some good recommendations to the governor, and so I agreed to continue serving on the Education Trust that has, you know, been serving up to this time. I'm very, you know, optimistic. I don't in any way underestimate the challenge, but I'm optimistic that there really is a spirit of trying to do something different here, and that continuing to do what we're doing is just not going to work, and I think that's recognized by a very broad spectrum of people. So I'm looking forward to this opportunity to work with this group and with the governor and with all of you to see if we can't do something better for our children.
Thank you. Good morning. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I am Kay Turan, and I'm honored to be a nominee for this process. In reading the development of Senate Bill 909 and looking at the collaboration and partnership of the legislative branch and the executive branch, I have the real belief that Oregon can get something right for our children and our families. And what I bring to this exercise is a long career in working as a professional social worker, working with the children and families who are vulnerable, who have not had all of the social supports that allow them as parents and as adults to make sure their children are effective in the educational process. We don't have the choice in Oregon to have any child not be successful in the public education system. The achievement gap has to be eliminated. When you travel to other countries and you're talking to 10, 11, 12-year-olds who are speaking three languages, that are talking about global competition, talking about being able to take on jobs, not only in the United States, but in China and India and other places, and you come back and you talk to our 10, 11, and 12-year-olds, we know that we have work to do. So what this initiative is about is saying, first, let's look at what's working well in our educational system. Secondly, let's look at what we need to change, and let's bring the diversity first of talent that's on this new board and the diversity of perspectives in the state of Oregon to get it right. My background not only includes being a professional social worker, but I've been a faculty member, assistant professor of social work at Portland State University. I am a product of Portland Public School System, K through 12. My children went to both public and private school. I know a lot about education. I currently am a regent at the University of Portland, and I'm also on the board of Chalkboard, and they have the class project, which is looking at what kind of supports do we need for teachers to make sure that they're able to do their best work. This is an enormous opportunity and challenge, but it's certainly an opportunity for Oregon to be a model in the country about what we're willing to do in terms of our investment, redirecting our resources, supporting all of our families to ensure that when they graduate from high school or when they graduate from college, they are ready for the world of work. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm delighted for you to consider my nomination. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum, Senators. My name is Johanna Vandering. I'm from Senate District 15 in Hillsboro, and I'm an elementary physical education teacher from the Beaverton School District. Last April, I was elected to represent 45,000 educators across the state and serve as the Vice President of the Oregon Education Association. It's a privilege to be here today as a nominee for the Oregon Education Investment Board. As a native Oregonian and an educator with over 20 years' experience, I bring the passion to improve public education here in Oregon. I spent my career building relationships and collaborating with others to make a positive difference. Earlier this summer, I participated in LearnWorks and served on the budget design team to help craft a path to improving the future of all Oregonians through quality public education. My dedication to working with others to build this future has been demonstrated in my words and my actions. I would be honored to earn your support to serve with this esteemed group of leaders across the state to make a difference in public education in Oregon. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for your willingness to serve. Any questions for these good folks? Yes, Senator Burdick.
Thank you. I've been reading a lot lately, and I'm very concerned about the fact that when our kids, the ones that get through higher education, you know, there's a winnowing process along the way that has been addressed by this and other panels, but even those who get through, that two-thirds of them have debt, sometimes overwhelming debt, and then they get out into the workplace and they hit a dead end. And so they've got limited options. I mean, back in the day when I graduated, you know, kids could go off to the Peace Corps, they could work for, you know, dirt poor wages, which is certainly how I got started. And actually, I'm back there again, but but along the way, things were different for a while. But I'm very concerned. The price of higher education has skyrocketed. I think it was the last figure I heard is it's increased 600% above inflation. The kids are getting out of there with debt. They're hitting a dead end when they get out, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that and what this board might do to address those kinds of issues.
Well, yeah, I mean, accessible and affordable education's really been something this country can be proud of, but opportunities are getting less and less for that. I think it's something we're really going to have to take into account to meet the goals of 40-40-20. If students can't afford to reach that top 80%, that's going to really limit us. So I think some of the other things some of the speakers have said before about dual credit enrollment, completing college credits while in high school, it's one way. Other ways are we're talking about what's involved in a program and in a four-year degree, and you know what are the necessary components of that, things like that. So really looking at the entire structure of the system and what's required and the expenses involved in the length of study. You know, I think these are a lot of the discussion going on right now in higher education. So it's something the board will really have to look at. But I'm not, you know, ready to give you any definite answers. It's something really there is a lot of discussion going on throughout the entire country on that.
Well, Senator Burke, one of the things that contributes to that is we keep hearing over and over what a high percentage of students are unable to finish their degree, either a four-year degree in 4 years or a two-year degree in 2 years, because classes don't line up right or aren't available or so forth. So, you know, you have to do everything we can to look at how can you let a student efficiently move through the system? And as others have said, some of that's earning college credits when they're in high school, which obviously has cost reduction for them when they get to college. Some of it's making sure they move through the college system efficiently. But that's absolutely that issue is very much on the radar.
I would just add to that, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, it's a big issue because I was reading an article last week about a faculty salary at the University of Oregon being $76,000 a year. I thought if you put that into the United States market of professors or lecturers that are at institutions of higher education, it's not competitive. So it's a big issue. It's not just the length of time students are in school. It's what we're doing with our professors, how we're supporting them, and what parents and families can afford. There's not going to be a simple fix for this particular challenge.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senators, I think one of the great things about LearnWorks this summer was we've talked a little bit about silos, and it was bringing people together to really talk about that continuum of education and trying to address some of those issues that David mentioned and make sure that we have a path for all students to be able to go through college and receive a degree without, you know, an amount of debt that doesn't allow them to be successful.
Madam Chair, to follow up, one of the themes that's kind of come through in all these panels is and I'm not an expert on education like we are so fortunate to have on this board, but it seems to me that the senior year of high school is emerging as a focal point. Mr. Mulvihill's comments about what he's, you know, seeing the experience of the kids and the discouragement because they're not prepared and they've wasted this time in senior year, and that kind of converges with the issue of the, you know, how do you get the most education for the least number of dollars, especially higher education. I would hope, you know, after listening to these boards, to these panels, I would hope that the senior year of high school becomes a special, almost standalone focus of this board, and how that wasted time can be made productive. And also, I just have to say, I'm just blown away by the quality of the people who have come forward for this board. It's a tremendously important board, and we are so fortunate in Oregon to have people who are willing to take a considerable chunk of time to devote to this, and that speaks for all these panels.
Senator, can I just want to share a story. I was in Beaverton, and the school board decided to add additional credits for seniors to be able to take additional courses. And it was a long discussion about being able to have students be ready for college. And one of the school board members had pushed really hard on this. And it so happened that when her son was a senior, he opted out and didn't take. He actually took less credits. And it was this really magnifies how important it is that we're all in this together in public education. It needs to be the family, the student, the teachers, the legislature, all of us working together to help students make great choices so they can be successful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Atkinson.
Yes. I do want to commend everyone who's appeared so far because, like my colleagues have said, I think it's an absolutely brilliantly talented board. I do have two degrees of skepticism that maybe you could help us with. The first one is we already have a tremendous amount of groups that tell the legislature how lousy they are. We have the established teachers union. We have the Stanford Children, the ESDs, there's the school board lobby, there's chalkboard. And to various degrees of whatever, it all comes back to you're not doing the job right. And then you move to a different phrase, which is, well, just you could react to this, new and different. Let me give you a list of what was new and different since I've been here. Sim and Cam was new and different. It was partisan and a gigantic failure. We had a former governor, no disrespect, but he came in and looked at the legislature as nothing but a rubber stamp. And so he was meeting with the Higher Education Board before he was even confirmed. They were meeting. They had this big agenda. It was this big thing. Bam, 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 passed through, and it blew up. Quality education model, partisan, didn't work. Help me understand how this is going to be new and different and not partisan.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I think we can't undo the past, and I don't want to take responsibility for the past. I think what I see as real hopeful is that the legislature did pass in a Bill 909, and the governor did introduce that legislation to be considered. And I think what he has done in appointing this very diverse group of people, I don't think most of us know each other, some of us do, is to say, okay, here's an opportunity to get it right. And this is not a blame game. I think when you look at a statistic that says 54% of the children in Oregon do not graduate from high school in 4 years, we've got a problem. And I think if we can acknowledge that as a collective and as a collaboration and as a partner with each other, we can come with our best work and get it right. We will need to look at how we are dedicating our funds. We will need to look at what each one of our roles is in that process. But the only way we will come out with a product that we all value is for us to say we're in this together, that we're not blaming anyone for where we are, but we need everyone to get it better. And that's what my contribution can be to this effort.
And not so much an answer to your question, but I think you're raising a point, and points well taken. I can't speak for the whole board, but
you know, the board should be working in closer contact with the legislature as we're setting policy throughout Oregon.
Well, can I just interrupt there, because this is a very big philosophical point for me. And if you've looked at how I vote, I am passionately voting. I always vote against task forces. I hate task forces. And I'm very skeptical of new boards and commissions and all that. And here's why. It's got nothing to do with the charge. It's got nothing to do with the mission. It's got nothing to do with politics. It is, constitutionally, it is the legislature who sets the policy. And we have a giant task force, and we have a giant work group and a board. It's called the legislature. And people run for office. Everybody has two representative and a senator, and we are supposed to do that. And the failure the last 30 years of us as a legislative body, as the institution to lead, we create boards and commissions. And what happens is we say, well, we're not going to set any policy because we're going to wait for the board recommendations, the committee recommendations, the task force recommendations. And then nothing. What we do as an institution so famously is we mistake motion for progress. Well, we've got a commission on that. But we don't actually do. We don't actually implement. Every panel who's come up on this board has told me about the governor's commitment. Let me remind the board. It is the legislature that sets the policy. It is not the executive. It is the legislature. And the vote to create this was not unanimous. It was seen as partisan. It was seen as, great, SimCam, higher ed, quality education model. Republicans are going to get beat up and they're going to have their integrity dragged through the mud at somebody's political action committee. I mean, there's a lot of raw. I know you can't forgive the or go on the past, but there's a lot of raw nerve here. There's a lot of Republicans that care deeply about care about public school funding and are always left out. And yet we're the ones that have the checkbook. I just say that as a charge to you, that you're stepping into more than you think, and there's a tremendous amount of skepticism that says, great, another board and commission, another motion for progress. I hope it's different. You know, I think this board is incredibly talented, and there's a wealth of information, but, you know, it's the legislature that sets the policy, not the governor.
Thank you for your opinions, Senator Atkinson. I did not hear a question there, and we do have a witness scheduled for a time certain that we're past that time. Do we have any last questions?
I do. I'll ask it, but I don't expect it to be answered by this group without a significant process. You know, Oregon has a very strong commitment to public education, and all of us, I think, on this dais have benefited from Oregon public education, and the benefits are very clear. That egalitarian nature pervades everything we do. We want to make public education the vehicle that brings success to people. Other countries with whom we're competing in the global market don't do that. They look at a winnowing process, highly competitive, very rigorous. They focus on the top 10%. And, you know, our students are going to have to compete with that top 10%. And when you look at the English speakers in India, there are more English speakers in India in the top 10% than there are students of any grade in the U.S. So, you know, you've got essentially two completely different systems, one that produces because it's highly competitive and very exclusive, and one that attempts to produce by being extremely open, very egalitarian, very accessible. Tell me how we're going to get to the place where our students routinely compete globally. I mean, again, Madam Chair, I don't expect an answer. I think that's just part of the charge. I'd love to hear any comment. A brief one.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I'm happy to share my story because I was raised in Northeast Portland, lived most of my life here. The schools that I went to, except for high school, were predominantly black. When I was in school, it was unheard of that a student couldn't read or write and well. And I believe that if you had teachers when I was a child that were quite capable of teaching any child that came into that classroom, regardless of background, regardless of economic status, we can do it again. I'm one who believes that we know what to do. We just have the political will to do it.
Thank you. Well, that was probably a great comment to end on. And I want to thank the four of you, but even more the 12 group of outstanding individuals that have been nominated for the Education Investment Board, because this has been an embarrassment of riches in this committee, but I'd say I have never seen such a diverse group of busy people with a wealth of background. I use the term best and brightest, and I think clearly what's been assembled here are the best and brightest in Oregon to solve, I think, a problem that's central to economic recovery, to a democratic state, and to everything that matters to the teachers and kids and to the good people of Oregon. So I am absolutely incredibly grateful to all of you for your willingness to serve on this board. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So, members, we will be not taking up a motion on this board today. We will be dealing with the confirmation of this group in November, but I have no doubt that that will be the action that we take at that time. And I'll close the public hearing on these appointments, and I will open a public hearing on the appointments of Ken Allen, Terry Andrews, Elizabeth Baxter, Dr. George Brown, Aaliyah Christofferson, Dr. Bruce Goldberg, Jose Gonzalez, Teresa Miller, and Gretchen Peterson to the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange Corporation. And I believe we have the first of those folks by telephone. And that is Teresa Miller. Teresa, are you there?
I am.
Hi, thanks a lot for being so patient with us. We just had an outstanding group of people that we could just not let them go without a few questions. So we've just opened the hearing on the Health Exchange Corporation Board, and you are the first person that we're hearing from. So if you'd like to just briefly describe your background and your vision for this board, that would be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. And before I just make a few remarks, I just want to apologize that I'm not able to attend the hearing in person today. And thank you for allowing me to participate via phone. I'm right now in D.C. for a Kaiser Family Foundation conference on health insurance rate review, and that kind of gets into my background as the administrator of the insurance division. I'm really proud Oregon was invited to attend this conference today to talk about our rate review process because they wanted to hear from a state that has used its authority expansively and emphasized transparency and consumer input into our process. So this was a great opportunity for Oregon to kind of be highlighted in front of a national audience. So thank you for letting me join over the phone. As you know, Senate Bill 99, which established the requirements for the Health Insurance Exchange Board, provided for two ex officio members of the board, the directors of the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Consumer and Business Services, or their designees. So my name is before you today as the administrator of the insurance division and the designee of the director of DCBS. Since the exchange is being developed and will eventually operate within the larger health insurance market, which is regulated by the insurance division, I think it's going to be critical to the success of the exchange that the insurance division and the exchange work very closely together, both as the exchange is being developed and once it's up and running. There are a number of areas where the work of the exchange and the work of the division will potentially overlap. In the interest of time, I'll just give you one brief example. There's a provision in the federal law that provides for review and disclosure of potentially unreasonable rate increases. This is a function today that's carried out by the insurance division. However, there's a separate provision in the federal law that requires insurers to submit justification of all premium increases to the exchange and publish them online. So this is certainly one area where working together has, I think, a lot of potential to avoid duplication of effort. And again, Senate Bill 99 recognized the benefits, I think, of coordination between the exchange and DCBS by including the director of DCBS or designee on the exchange board. I would certainly be honored to serve in that role, and I've seen the list of appointments before the committee today, so I tried to keep my comments brief, but I'd be happy to answer any questions. And thanks for the opportunity to be before you today.
Great. Thanks a lot for being here telephonically. Any questions for Ms. Miller? Okay, we don't have any, so we'll let you get back to your good work, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so next I'm going to call Dr. Bruce Goldberg, who's also joining us by telephone. Dr. Goldberg, are you there?
Chair Rosenbaum, Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Oregon Health Fund, yes.
Great, great. And we are sitting here in the Capitol. We've just opened a hearing on the Exchange Corporation Board, and you are the second person that we've heard from. So if you could just very briefly tell us of your interest in serving on this board and what you hope to accomplish, that would be great.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Bruce Goldberg. I'm the Director of the Oregon Health Authority. First, my apologies for not being there in person. I'm four blocks away with the PET board, and we'll try to juggle things this morning. I think many of you know I currently lead the Oregon Health Authority. I've previously helped to lead the Department of Human Services and the Office of Health Policy for the state, and I'm a physician. I've spent the last three decades working at how to get better health care for people in our country and in our state. I've done that through a variety of endeavors. I'm a physician. I've taken care of people in the exam room day to day. I've taught in an academic medical center. I helped lead a health insurance organization. Worked for the public health service and now for the state. And so I know this business from a lot of perspectives, from the perspective of patients and communities, from the policy perspective, as well as from the business side. And so that's what I bring to the Insurance Exchange Board. I think it's a great opportunity for the state to figure out better ways that we can get health care to people in our state, and I would be very honored to be a part of that.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions for Dr. Goldberg? Okay, it looks like we don't have any, so we'll let you get back to PEB. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And next, I'll call Ken Allen, Terry Andrews, and Elizabeth Baxter, if the three of you would like to come forward. And thanks a lot for waiting so patiently. I would leave that chair there, Mike, because I think we're going to need it for the next group. And so thank you for being here today, your willingness to serve. If you just introduce yourself briefly and tell us about your background and desire to serve on the Exchange Board.
Madam Chair, my name is Ken Allen. I'm the Director of Oregon AFSCME. We have 25,000 members throughout the state. We have all the way from well-insured members to uninsured members. I have a 37-year career in collective bargaining, dealing with employers from 3 all the way up to 40,000. Have bargained with for-profit, non-profit, public, and private companies. Bargained many, many contracts over employer and employee contributions, as well as plan design. And truthfully, I would say for the last 20 years, health insurance is probably the hottest topic in every round of bargaining. I do think, though, that we have a healthcare crisis that's much larger than any single employer. It's caused by increasing claims, healthcare inflation, and people also not taking personal responsibility for their health. I have an experience that I think can help this board. I served for quite a few years on the Workers' Comp Management Labor Advisory Committee and on the SAFE Board of Directors and help bring employers and labor together to create workable change. As our union employs 53 folks, so I'm in the employer role every now and then, and we try to provide the best coverage at affordable rates. I think the task of this board that I'm particularly interested in are for me threefold. I wouldn't be truthful if I didn't tell you that my passion is providing coverage for the uninsured. And I've had a couple of experiences in the last few years meeting some of our members that I'll never forget. A hospital worker in Eastern Oregon in Hermiston, works in a hospital as a cook, couldn't afford to pay for the coverage for his family, so he didn't even take the hospital's insurance for himself. Another member here in the Valley, I just met her this summer. She works for a social services agency, and the employee share of the premium copay is so high because her husband is unemployed. She has two severely disabled children. She chose that she could only insure herself and one child. And those are dramatic stories, and they impact me as a leader of the union when I hear that from some of my members. I think the other charge of this group is to improve the competitive marketplace for small businesses, nonprofits, and other businesses. We have to put together a plan that seeks to improve that marketplace. And we should try to influence the whole market on such things as evidence-based plan design issues and improving the healthcare culture. Thank you for your consideration of my appointment.
Thank you for being here. Please go ahead.
My name is Terry Andrews. I live in Corvallis, and I own a small business in Albany. It's CG Industries. It's a anodizing and electrolysis nickel plating plant, and I have 7 employees that are on my health insurance. Currently, I have 9 total employees. I've had as many as 12, but it is a very small business. And I've always insured with medical and dental my employees, but I've also watched the costs go incredibly high. When I bought the business in 1999, full health coverage for my people was $169 a month, and that was with no copay. It was no deductible, and now it's about $539 per person with a $1,000 deductible, $20 copay, and no vision coverage. And so I understand why small businesses don't do this, but I understand why they need to do this. And so I think what I bring to this is, from a small business perspective, understanding that it's important to, in my case, my people as well as me, that people are covered, and make it affordable for all of us, and maybe to make it clear to small businesses, or maybe convey to them the ways that they can cover at a reasonable price and make an incentive for them to try. So my background is I have an electrical engineering degree from Morgan State University, and I have a JD from Willamette University. Mm-hmm. And this small business my father started in the 80s, and I bought it from him. It has nothing to do with my education. But anyway, we have had some hard times, but I have made, the healthcare be a cost of doing business for me. And so I'm just hoping I can bring something as far as a small business owner to this committee, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot for your willingness to serve.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, my name is Liz Baxter. I will tell you, the only person who calls me Elizabeth was my mother. I am currently the executive director of We Can Do Better, formerly known as the Archimedes Movement, and have been doing that for the past 6 years. And part of that has taken me to, I believe, every corner of the state except for Lakeview, which we are hoping to get to sometime this year, to hear from Oregonians what they're concerned about and what it is they'd like to see as we talk about transforming this health care system. And so the pieces that I bring probably start and end with this fact, and that is that while I'm a transplant to Oregon, I have 3 boys that were born in Oregon, and it's always just very interesting for me to think how they see this state as native Oregonians compared to how I see this state as this place I came to, and I'm not as tied to it physically. And my boys are 30, 19, and 17. And when I think about health system transformation, the insurance exchange, a lot of overlaps with the other nominees that you heard testimony from, and I would like to see Oregon be a place where they can live and they can thrive. And that's been very, very challenging, and both the cost of healthcare and how we deliver healthcare services has been quite a challenge. And so part of my interest in being on the exchange board is for us to not create another silo. for us to not think about the exchange in exclusion from all of the other transformation efforts that are going on, the development of coordinated care organizations, what we're doing with primary care and medical homes, that all of those things are going to lead us to whatever this transformed system is. And it has to be a system that can be translated, that makes sense to people who are sitting in a coffee shop in La Grande, who are sitting somewhere in Klamath Falls. Because if it doesn't, the public is not going to understand the kind of changes that we're bringing forth. So we need to do that in partnership and in collaboration with the public and with policymakers, making sure that what we're talking about makes sense. And so I bring this kind of communication link between decision makers, policy makers, and the public, which I think is going to be a critical step for us moving forward. And I hope that the exchange, when it gets up and running, has the ability to leverage some of those other changes. So there's going to be a lot of interplay and interaction among the activities. So I am honored to be nominated and appreciate your considering my nomination.
Thank you very much for your willingness to serve. Any questions for these people? Yes, Senator Burdick.
Madam Chair, I wanted to pick up on a comment that Mr. Allen made about the costs of health care and the importance of personal responsibility, for health care. One of my personal goals is always to stay out of the health care system to the maximum extent possible. So I'm just wondering what thoughts you have as to how you can kind of integrate that into the activities of the exchange. I know it's not your direct mission, but I think in the healthcare system, it's just got to be considered. You know, you look at one of the things that really makes me mad when I'm watching TV is all the drug ads. Well, if you're eating bad stuff, don't drop that burrito. Take a Prevacid or whatever those things are called. And so we're being inundated with, we don't have to take any responsibility. We can eat what we want, never exercise, and just take some drug to solve the problem. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are in terms of what the health exchange might contribute to that effort.
Could you get those commercials?
I have to be honest about this. I feel like I'm not very successful because of my staff of 53 people. I'm 58 years old and probably the healthiest person in my family. I think the same thing. And being a role model doesn't seem to work. I think we have to figure out better education tools and some kind of incentives for folks to look at and make the right choices. Incentives related to if the however you look at the recent changes in the PED plan, there are incentives for people that are going to play a role in taking better care of themselves. And we have to face the fact that our society is not very healthy. Overweight problems lead to diabetes problems, lead to major health issues, heart problems, and we have to spend more time, I think, trying to educate people about taking better care of themselves.
One of the things that and it's where I see that interplay, the Oregon Health Authority, the exchange are operating within these three objectives of the triple aim, of which the first of those is that somehow what we're doing is actually improving the health of the population, and so how the exchange can leverage what kinds of benefits are offered in insurance, what's the role of insurance in trying to drive prevention and more individual activity and responsibility for health, that all of those things, those are the leverage points that I see, that if we just kind of get myopic and think about insurance as a product, how do we sell it, what's the cost of it, without actually being able to look at all of the things that we have to influence to get to that better health, I'm not sure that we're going to get as far as we can if we're decide that we're going to look at how do we influence behavior as well as the purchase of insurance.
Thank you all for being here and for being willing to serve. We have four other people, so let's put that chair back up there, and I'll call Dr. George Brown, Aaliyah Christofferson, Jose Gonzalez, and Gretchen Peterson. thanks a lot for waiting so patiently. We've had a really big workload today of very important appointments. So thanks for being here, and whatever order you'd like to go, please go ahead.
Well, since the custom has been alphabetical this morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I will take the opportunity to go first. Good morning. My name is George Brown. I am President and Chief Executive Officer of Legacy Health. It's an honor to be nominated to serve on the Oregon Health Exchange Board. By way of professional background, I am a physician with specialty training in internal medicine, gastroenterology, and medical management. I am a 26-year veteran of the United States Army, having served in the capacity of soldier, clinician, medical educator, administrator, and general officer. My career experience includes serving as commander or chief executive officer of an Army research laboratory, four Army hospitals, and including Walter Reed. Upon retiring from active duty, I joined MultiCare Health System in Tacoma, Washington, serving for nearly 10 years in various senior executive positions, culminating in my final position as Chief Operating Officer. I joined Legacy Health in 2008. Legacy is a Portland-based health system with 10,000 employees, six hospitals, 39 clinic sites, and a large employed physician group. Legacy provides a full spectrum of health services from primary care to specialty surgical services, including a level one adult and pediatric trauma services, the Randall Children's Hospital at Legacy Emanuel, and Oregon's only burn center. Legacy Health currently serves the largest share of Medicaid, uninsured, and charity patients in the Portland metropolitan area. My interest in serving on the insurance exchange is working with others to find affordable, sustainable solutions to accessible health for Oregon citizens, employees, and employers. Senators, I welcome your questions and thank you for this opportunity. It is indeed an honor for me to be considered to serve.
Thank you very much, Dr. Brown. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Senators, members of the committee. My name is Jose Gonzalez, and I live here in Salem. And I appreciate the opportunity to address this committee and look forward to serving on this very important board. I feel I'm a good candidate for the following reasons. One, I am a small business owner who has survived the economic downturn, and we're purchasing through the exchange. And I believe health is really the number one issue. Without good health, like my mom always said, we cannot work, create jobs, or attend to our families.
Mr. Gonzalez, I'm sorry to interrupt you. If you just pull back a little bit from that mic, I think we'll get a better sound level. Thanks.
And so I said, my last comment, without good health, we cannot create jobs, work, or attend to our families. My business is Tucasa Real Estate. We are the most established Latino-owned real estate office in the state of Oregon. And in my 15-year career in real estate, I have touched many families, business owners, and it has given me the flexibility to serve on dozens of boards and work with many community groups. And I hope my input will help create a safe environment for individuals and small businesses to shop and compare plans. And I also hope my life experience being multicultural will bring an important component to the discussion, especially on the delivery side. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you for being here and for your willingness to serve. These mics are very sensitive, so that happens once in a while.
Chairwoman Rosenbaum, members of the committee, thank you for taking your time to hear me today. My name is Aaliyah Christofferson, and I am the owner of ATL Communications, a small business that I started 20 years ago in the telecommunications business. If someone had asked me a few years ago if I would be interested, much less passionate, about the healthcare exchange, my answer would have been, I really don't know anything about it. But after 20 years of covering my employees and struggling with the kinds of issues that face small businesses that are not just financial issues on what it costs, it turned out I knew a lot more about it than I thought I did. I'm very pleased to see that there are other small business owners in this board, because the ones that I've served on so far with the Health Fund Board and the Technical Committee, there was really no other representation from small business. I caught some of the passion for this from some of the fine actual state employees that I've worked with through these several committees and how committed they are to this. I was raised from a very young age with the if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem motto. And so I'm very honored to be asked to be on this board, and I hope to bring what I have for the last few years, which is a very much outsider's understanding of healthcare and how it affects small businesses, and also to improve the healthcare for all of the Oregonians.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. My name is Gretchen Peterson. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about my nomination for the Health Insurance Exchange Board. I'm excited to participate in the creation of this new program that will bring affordability and accessibility of healthcare coverage to all Oregonians in the very near future. I believe that business community support will be critical to the long-term success of the exchange, and my goal will be to ensure that the lines of communication between the exchange board and the exchange staff, the legislature, and business stay open as they have been up to this point, and that my goal would be to ensure that the benefits of this exchange will be regularly communicated and consistently to both employers and consumers across the state of Oregon. My experience is as 25 years of human resources professional in small, medium, and large-sized companies from rural eastern Oregon, Pendleton to be exact, as well as metropolitan Portland. And I think that diversity of background and exposure to the state will bring an open perspective to the board and sensitivity and awareness of the different challenges that face different sizes and types of industries as it comes to healthcare purchasing. My experience also is as the primary decision and financial decision maker on healthcare purchasing in the fully insured group market. It's not the small group market, I will acknowledge, but at the same time, we have, as a company, several locations in the state of Massachusetts, and so for the past 4 years, we've been working with our associates and the administrative requirements to participate in the Massachusetts Healthcare Connector Program. In addition to that, I just also want to mention that I believe that business advocacy and consumer advocacy are not mutually exclusive. And as most human resources professionals know, that there are a fair amount of employees that are not covered by their employer's healthcare plans. And so it's not an unusual circumstance where we sit across from an anxious and concerned associate who is trying to navigate the individual consumer market. And so I'm very sensitive and aware of the concerns that the individual consumer healthcare purchaser has this time. I welcome any questions you might have. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to participate in this board.
Great. Thank you. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Somebody mentioned myopic, which I think means nearsighted. I'd rather you be obsessive-compulsive. There's so many products. It's bewildering for individuals and business owners. I think if you focus on the details that make meaningful comparisons possible, and just that, you'll be creating something that is of huge benefit to Oregonians. Essentially, what I want you to do is look at the fruit salad and reassemble the apples and oranges and let people be able to compare those programs in a way that gives them opportunities to make choices. I think what will happen, Madam Chair, is that the Oregon companies that we're inviting into participation by creating the board rather than having it imposed will be sensitive to the choices that are made, and I hope they'll make new products available, offer new alternatives, new ways of combining programs that, you know, literally can be tailored to individuals' needs, and that's how I think we get to cost containment and driving the cost down. So, you know, I know that you're going to be under tremendous pressure to answer all the questions about health care costs and insurance. You can't do it. You really need to focus on making that matrix understandable, easily accessible, and meaningful to folks who have to make the choices. I know I wouldn't want to go out today and try to make choices for myself. I'm looking forward to the product of the exchange. I know lots of folks are watching because they need the help. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Not a question.
I'm really impressed that you managed to combine OCD, the fruit salad, healthy eating mention, and several other things into that comment.
I was listening, Madam Chair.
All right, any other questions for these good folks? Okay, well, thank you very much for being here. And we will be acting on all of your appointments as a group at the end of today's hearing, but I just want to thank everybody of this group who appeared, really an impressive group, and taking on one of the most challenging problems that we're facing both in the economy and the health of Oregonians, starting with small businesses. But I think Oregon will be soon leading the way in this area, so it's a very exciting opportunity for you to serve, and I'm glad that you're bringing your experience to it. Okay, I'll close the public hearing on the Oregon Health Exchange Corporation, and now we have a few other boards to do, and we'll start with opening a public hearing on Jennifer Kleski and Michelle Blashing to the Commission on Asian Affairs. And first we are going to have Jennifer, who's joining us by telephone. Michelle, you can feel free to come forward to the dais too. Jennifer, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Thank you.
This is Diane Rosenbaum. I'm the chair of the Senate Executive Appointments Committee. I'm sitting here with my colleagues, Senator Farioli and Senator Beyer, and we're looking forward to hearing from you a little bit about your background and your desire to serve on the Commission on Asian Affairs.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. Thank you, Senators.
So please go ahead.
Okay. My name is Jennifer Kleski, and I live in Portland, Oregon. I'm in Senate District Number 17, and I just really want to share my appreciation for the ability to speak with you all this morning and for the opportunity to carry this role in the community. As I am absent, I realize it is a huge disadvantage, and I hope that it in no way impairs my ability to serve in this role for you and for the community. I am moved to stand for this position on the Oregon Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs for many reasons, and I hope I'm able to convey the most important ones in the next minute or two. Personally, I just want to share I'm a bicultural mixed-race adoptee, and although I definitely do not speak for all mixed-race individuals or all adoptees' experiences, I just want to say that in my personal experience, I've grown up knowing a sense of displacement and often a sense of dispowerment for lack of an ability to really claim my roots, to have a connection with my biological parents, and to feel like I have a voice in my community. And it is out of that sense of discomfort that I chose to study for over a decade, a very specific international program that focused on issues of marginalization, how they affect an individual in their own lives, in their relationships, but also in communities and in regions. After studying for a number of years in a very focused clinical counseling program and personal growth program, I then went on and did a master's in conflict facilitation and organizational development, which gave me the opportunity to facilitate in conflicts and in seminars in a number of different places in the world, in Israel, in Palestine, in Australia, in London, and in different parts of Oregon. So it is with that kind of background, experience, exposure, and facilitation levels that I am hoping to serve and get to know more of the specifically Asian American and Pacific Islander community within Oregon. I have some exposure of that within APANO. And professionally, I work as a family therapist, an individual counselor, and as a diversity consultant within organizations. I think the most that I'm able to offer is a capacity to speak and validate many of the experiences that are often unseen from an outside perspective, and the capacity to understand or validate or speak and communicate around issues that are often hard to articulate and often unknown. And because I've spent so much time exploring that within myself and in relationship with my community, I wish to be able to share that, what I've learned from that, between the people that I speak with and between you, the senators.
Okay, great. Well, that was a terrific summary of your very impressive background. I was just looking at your resume, which is several pages long. So you packed a lot into your years, and we're thrilled that you're willing to serve. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us by telephone, and we will be acting on your appointment at the end of today's hearing.
I so appreciate that and look forward to meeting you all.
Likewise.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, great. And Michelle, I hope I didn't mangle your name too badly, but I'm sure you'll correct me. So
that's fine.
Please introduce yourself.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, my name is Michelle Vlach-Ing. That's Czechoslovakian, and the other part is Ing. My husband is in the hallways with our daughter right now. I thank you for this opportunity to address the committee, and just to give you a little bit of background of who I am and where I'm from, I grew up in Hawaii. I'm actually a fifth-generation American. My family is immigrated from China to work both on the sugar plantations in Hawaii and also the railroad. So I hail from both parts. And I moved to Oregon in 1998 to attend law school at Willamette University. And while I was at Willamette University, I myself and a few other law students restarted the Minority Law Student Association. It had been inactive for a few years. And also because minorities are underrepresented in the Oregon State Bar, I also received a bar scholarship from the Oregon State Bar and the Oregon Minority Lawyers Association. I ended up taking the bar here in Oregon, and I stuck around. Currently, I'm a partner in a private practice law firm. We do intellectual property law, which encompasses patents, trademarks, and copyrights, as well as business. I also volunteer with the bar. I am an elected member to the Oregon House of Delegates in Region 6. I serve on the Marion County Bar Association as a member of the board of directors, and I'm also a campaign co-chair for the co-chair for the Lawyers Campaign for Equal Justice, in which we raise money for legal aid. My interest in serving on this committee is, how Asians are perceived in the media, as well as how our business and trade development is going with the Asian countries. I would like to see more exports from Oregon, making it through to Asia, and with anything else that the legislature would like to send their way, I'd love to work on that.
Great. Well, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule and your willingness to serve on the commission. Any questions? Okay. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And I'll close the public hearing on these two appointments to the Commission on Asian Affairs. Next, I'll open a public hearing on the appointment of Commissioner Mary Stern to the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. And Ms. Stern, are you?
Yes,
I see you coming forward. Great. Thanks a lot for waiting so patiently.
Oh, no problem. It was very interesting listening to all those great members.
Yeah, it's been an
members.
Exciting morning.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. I'm Mary Stern, Yamhill County Commissioner, and I'm pleased to be here with you today as the Governor's nominee for the Criminal Justice Commission. I've spent most of my adult life in the criminal justice system, never as an offender. Just want to make that clear. I have a Bachelor of Science in Criminal Justice and a law degree. I was a U.S. Department of Justice Honors Attorney. I worked for the Federal Bureau of Prisons and the U.S. District Court, and for the past 9 years as a county commissioner, closely involved with our criminal justice team, which is the sheriff's office, district attorney's office, juvenile department, including probation and detention, and our community corrections department. Last year, Yamhill County was selected by the National Institute of Corrections as one of seven seed sites for participation in the Evidence-Based Decision-Making Initiative, the goal of which is to use evidence and data to improve public safety outcomes in our communities. The Evidence-Based Decision-Making Initiative is extremely important in my county and relevant to my service on the Criminal Justice Commission. As our dollars shrink, we must ensure that what we're doing is effective and efficient. As a county commissioner, I oversee all department budgets, including those of the criminal justice team. In my county, approximately 70% of our general fund is spent on criminal justice services. This is common in counties across the state. County commissioners understand firsthand the importance of spending our limited dollars most wisely to get the best outcomes we can. And I'm pleased to have the support of the Association of Oregon Counties for my nomination to the Criminal Justice Commission. I believe my participation in the Evidence-Based Decision-Making Initiative, my role as a county commissioner, and my background will enable me to make positive contributions to the Criminal Justice Commission, and I thank you for your time here today. Any questions?
Great. Thanks a lot for being here. Any questions for Ms. Stern? Okay. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you.
So I will close the public hearing on the appointment of Commissioner Mary Stern to the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission and open a public hearing on the appointment of Glenda Waddell to the Electrical and Elevator Board. Good morning, and thank you, too, for waiting so patiently.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. Thank you for my nomination, and my name is Glenda Waddell. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I am with BOMA Association and have received my certification as an RPA FMA. I'm a commercial property manager with Norris & Stevens, and I look forward to meeting new colleagues and personal growth and increasing my knowledge, but sharing my knowledge with this board.
And I'm sorry, I missed at the beginning what your background, what is your background?
I'm a commercial property manager, and I have my BOMA certification with RPA FMA, that is Real Property Administrator and Facility Manager Administrator.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And I'll close the public hearing and open a public hearing on the appointments of Carlos Perez and Santiago Ventura to the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. And I believe we have Mr. Perez joining us by telephone and in the room. Mr. Ventura, if you'd like to come forward, that would be great. Thanks for waiting so patiently. We're trying to coordinate a few dozen things this morning, as you can tell. All ready? Hi, is this Carlos Perez?
Yes, it is.
Hi, this is Diane Rosenbaum. I'm here in Salem. I'm the chair of the Senate Executive Appointments Committee. Sitting here with me are Senators Farioli and Senator Beyer, and we just opened a hearing on the appointment of you and Mr. Santiago Ventura to the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. So if you'd like to just briefly tell us about your background and your interest in serving on this commission, that would be great.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. As mentioned, my name is Carlos Perez, and I reside in unincorporated Washington County between the cities of Hillsboro and Beaverton. I've been a school educator, a public school educator for my entire career, five of which were in southeastern Idaho and 31 years in the Hillsboro School District. I started there as a school counselor and worked my way to deputy superintendent when I retired from the district in 2009. Since then, I've been working as a consultant on issues of school climate and educational equity, and also I've kind of found kind of return to my old passion of being a school principal, and I've substituted as a principal for a few times at a variety of schools. I'm interested in the commission primarily because I want to ensure that Latinos in the state of Oregon are integrated into the social fabric of the state. I think I would like to have them seen as equal partners in the state, contributing to the growth and vitality of the state. I think Latinos also provide a cultural richness to the state of Oregon, which I think people would be able to appreciate. The second reason is to work in developing leadership capacity in the Latino community so future generations can have a voice in the development of their respective communities and in the state of Oregon in general. And basically, those are the reasons why I'm interested in being on the commission.
Great. Well, thank you for your willingness to serve and for joining us by telephone.
Sure.
And if you can hang with us for a minute, we'll hear from your colleague and then see if we have any questions.
Okay.
Mr. Ventura, would you like to go ahead?
Good morning. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here. It is an honor for the governor to nominate me as to join this commission. As far as my background, I was born in the village of Nunjuku, located in the state of Oaxaca, Mexico, in the Mixtec region in that state.
And excuse me just for a moment. I introduced you, but you need to say your own name, too, for our record.
My name is Santiago Ventura, and I just going to repeat what I just said.
Right.
I was born in the village of Nunjuku, located in the state of Oaxaca, Mexico, which it is a Mixtec region of the state of Oaxaca. Mixtec people are one of the 60 community in Mexico. I only went to school for 6 years in my village due to my parents' socioeconomic situation. As a result of that, at the age of 15, I joined the migration to the north, basically to the United States, looking for an opportunity to save some money so that I can go back to school and finish with my education. In 1986, I had the misfortune to be arrested and tried and sentenced to life in prison for a crime I did not commit. I lived in incarceration for almost 5 years. And meanwhile, I took that advantage to learn the language that was new to me and educate myself. After 2 years of being in prison, thanks to the people from the community of Oregon, they were able to recruit one of the most respected attorney to take my case at the time, Paul D. Muniz. Today, he's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in Oregon. After I was able to prove my innocence to the judicial system, I was released from prison and went to study at the University of Portland to take advantage of a scholarship that was given to me. I strongly believe that if there's any injustice or wrongdoing, we as the people have the power to correct that error. Since what has happened to me has a lot to do with misunderstanding of culture, languages, and other barriers that people within the system now are aware of. I graduated from the University of Portland in 1996 and with a Bachelor of Science as a social worker. I became a United States citizen in 2001. And this is the reason that I like to contribute for a better in the state of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity.
Wow, you have an incredible story. And really, it's amazing that you're here to tell about it and willing to serve on this commission. It's really impressive.
Thank you.
Any questions for these good folks? Okay, well, thank you both. Thank you, Carlos. Thank you, Santiago, for your willingness to serve. And we will be acting on your appointment at the end of our hearing today.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you very much.
And I'll close this public hearing and open a public hearing on the appointment of Susan Hathaway Markser to the trustees of the State Library. And just so he'll be ready, Dr. Alan Hedges, you'll be up next. Good morning, and thank you for waiting so patiently.
Thank you.
You'd like to just tell us a little about your background and your interest in serving on the Board of Trustees of the Library.
I will. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Senators. My name is Susan Hathaway Markser. I live in Portland, in Senator Shields' district in Northeast Portland. I'm a native Oregonian. I'm quite honored to be appointed by the governor to the State Library Board of Trustees. I've long been a library user since I was in the first grade. I know the importance of early childhood education when it comes to reading. And I became a passionate advocate in the 1980s for school and public libraries and the services that they provide. I've served in the Multnomah County Library Board for two terms, and I love that terrific library system, the people who work there, and the voters who tax themselves regularly to pay for it. I served on the Library Science and Technology Act Council, which is a subcommittee of the State Library Board that reviews requests for funding from libraries all around the state. This is funding that flows to them through the state from federal congressional sources. I know the State Library's mission, and I support it, and it is basically three-pronged: to provide information service to state government, state employees, and agencies, to provide reading material to the blind and print-disabled Oregonians, which is something that I've just recently learned more about, and I'm so impressed with what it offers to seniors who are having low vision problems. And then third, to provide leadership and assistance to improving library service to all Oregonians. Not every Oregonian is lucky enough to live in a place where there is library service, and I would like to help improve that. So if you confirm me, I will do my very best to be an excellent trustee of that State Library Board.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for your background and willingness to serve. Any questions? Okay. Thanks very much for
Thank
being
you.
Here. And I'll close the public hearing and open a public hearing on the appointment of Dr. Alan Hedges to the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery. Thank you again for waiting so patiently. If you'd like to just tell us a little bit about your background and your interest in serving on this board.
Good morning to all of you. Thank all of you for being here. My name is Dr. Alan Hedges. I live in McMinnville. I started out my professional career as a naturopathic physician, graduating from National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland. I practiced in Oregon for about 10 years, doing home births in Portland and along the coast. I then returned to allopathic medical school, and after graduating, did a residency in obstetrics and gynecology. I'm board certified in OBGYN and a fellow of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. In private practice, I've provided backup to certified nurse midwives, lay midwives, naturopathic physicians that attend home births. And I think my unique background allows me to serve on this board and serve the people of Oregon in a unique manner. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for being here, for your willingness to serve. Did we have any questions? Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I've been very supportive of midwifery services. I know that people want to make the choice for home births, and they very highly value those services. Is there adequate access to liability insurance for midwives?
It's my understanding that there is, yes. They can obtain malpractice insurance.
Thank you. I think it's hard not to ask you a question about, you know, the controversies that have been raging for a while, but so much recently over unlicensed midwifery. And I don't know exactly how that discussion plays out in terms of this board, but if you care to comment on it at all. Because I share the senator's great respect for the profession and think that it's a huge part of healthcare in our state, but this clearly is a problem that seems to be repeating itself. So,
well, over the last few years, I've taught classes for the certification process for direct entry midwives, and I think that's an important part of it. I know that Oregon, essentially anyone can deliver a baby. They don't have to be licensed. But being certified and licensed definitely gives midwives the opportunity to show that they've gone through an education and certification process, and I think that's really important.
Okay. I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your willingness to serve and for being here. I'll close the public hearing and open a public hearing on the appointment of Dr. Sheila Myers to the Oregon Board of Naturopathic Medicine, and she will be joining us by telephone. Dr. Myers, are you there?
Yes, this is Dr. Myers.
Great. This is Diane Rosenbaum. I'm the chair of the Oregon Senate Committee on Executive Appointments, and with me are my colleagues, Senator Lee Beyer, Senator Ted Ferrioli, Senator Jason Atkinson, and Senator Ginny Burdick. We're sitting here in the Capitol in Salem, and we would love to hear from you a little bit about your background briefly and your desire to serve on the Naturopathic Medicine Board.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Senators, for this opportunity confirmed to the Oregon Board. Really, I guess one of the main reasons is I've been asked repeatedly for years to help with this and to have a doctor from, more rural Oregon to participate. And I've been involved in medicine since my teens, been working in St. Charles, and then I've also did emergency work in Alaska, rural Alaska, and I've been a practicing naturopath and acupuncturist for approximately 20 years in Oregon. And the reason why I would like to do this is to help make sure that the both the new and the established naturopaths of Oregon, their continuing education, meets the needs of our fast-changing medical climate. And then also to help patients with their health choices and so that we can continue positive medical experiences.
Great. And Dr. Myers, I missed, did you receive your training here in Oregon?
I'm sorry, I didn't tell you that. Yes, I graduated from the Oregon College of Acupuncturists and the Oregon and NCNM, National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland.
Great. So any questions for Dr. Myers? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so we'll get back to, I'm sure, your busy practice and your busy day, and thank you for being willing to serve on the board.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Great.
Bye-bye.
I'm closing this public hearing and opening a public hearing on the appointment and reappointment of Jeremiah Stromberg to the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. Thank you for waiting so patiently and for being here and your willingness to continue to serve.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair, senators on the committee. My name is Jeremiah Stromberg. I'm from Portland, Oregon. And it is my desire to be the next sitting member of the Board of Parole. For clarification, I will be completing out the remaining term for a current board member and then starting a new term in December of this year to carry through until 2015. My experience has been over the last 20 years, I've been involved working with juveniles and adults in the criminal justice system. I've spent the last 10 years as a manager in Multnomah County Community Corrections, working in a vast array of parole and probation responsibilities, including specialized drug courts, field supervision, domestic violence supervision, and overseeing the local supervisory authorities for the local control offenders. I also spent 2 years on a rotation as the executive director for the Board of Parole, so I'm extremely familiar with the current sitting board members, the practices and procedures, and the responsibilities, and I certainly look forward to working with the wonderful staff who are there in a new capacity. And I'm certainly open to answering any questions the committee may have.
Great. Thank you very much for your willing to take on this assignment, which I know is a challenging one. Any questions? Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Could you please tell me, where's Pacific Christian College?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Atkinson, Pacific Christian College is in Fullerton, California, and I did a joint study between Pacific Christian and Cal State Fullerton to obtain both my English degree and my Biblical Studies degree.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being here today and for taking on this assignment.
Thank you.
And I'll close the public hearing. And that brings us to our last group of appointments. And I'm opening a public hearing on the appointments of Tanya Hollock, Jan Lewis, and Rick Togerson to the Residential and Manufactured Structures Board. The three of you would like to come forward. That would be great. I really, really, really thank you for sitting through all these very interesting hearings that we just held. And we're equally interested in hearing from you about your background, your interest in serving on the Residential and Manufactured Structures Board.
Madam Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, my name is Tanya Hallog. I'm from Beaverton, Oregon. I'm not a native Oregonian. I grew up in the Midwest and Colorado. I earned my bachelor's degree in civil engineering from the University of Colorado and my master's degree from Cal State Long Beach. I've been working in the field of structural engineering for the past 22 years, starting my career with the City of Los Angeles, working in the Public Works Department and also the Building Department as a plans examiner, which I think will be helpful with my appointment on the board. And in 1995, I moved up here from L.A. And been working as a private consultant for a structural engineering firm, and I am now one of the two owners of the company. We, on a regular basis, design a variety of commercial, residential, and educational-type buildings. So we do have experience in using both the Oregon Structural Specialty Code and also the Oregon Residential Specialty Code. I have previous experience working on the board for the Structural Engineers Association of Oregon and have also served on various committees, including the Snow Load Committee. And as part of that, we've been working with the State Building Codes Division to get our new snow load map updated into the code and posted electronically on the internet. I'm looking forward to serving on this board and hope that my experience will be valuable, and also I think it'll be a great learning experience. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your willingness to serve.
Ms. Lewis? Chairman Rosenbaum and Senators, I'm Jan Lewis, and I'm a builder from Southwest Portland, and I'm seeking appointment to the Residential and Manufactured Structures Board. The job of the board is to provide feedback to the Building Codes Division Director on the technical and scientific merits of the issues that come before the board, and I feel I'm qualified for this position because of my 34 years' experience in the construction industry. I began my career graduating graduating from Oregon State and went to work in commercial construction for Hoffman Construction Company up in Portland. Spent 12 years with them, and then since 1990, I've been a custom home builder and remodeler with my own company, Tryon Creek Construction, also up there in Portland. My interest in the building codes began back in 2003 when I studied to be one of the building code division's certified master builders. I was in the first group that studied and took the test. I'm state master builder number two. And the knowledge that I gained in that study program, the Master Builder program, I've used that code knowledge in not only in my own business, but also in some volunteer positions as well. I served 2 to 3 years on the Tri-County Code Forum Council up there in the Portland area, and I've also served as a member of the Oregon Home Builders Association Codes and Technology Committee for 3 years. I'm still a member of that committee, and I was chair of the committee in 2010. And I appreciate the opportunity to address you about this, and thank you for your time.
Great. Thanks a lot for bringing your background to this assignment.
Okay, Madam Chair, Senators. My name is Rick Torgerson. I live in Albany, Oregon. I'm a native-born Oregonian, born in Hood River, lived here my entire life. Also been in the manufactured housing industry pretty much my entire working life, straight out of high school, 1977, and been in the industry ever since. Worked in production, helped build the homes for a number of years, and then got into the customer service side of it and have been in the customer service side ever since. I work for Clayton Homes, who's the largest builder in the United States, manufactured housing, and also the largest builder in the Northwest in Oregon. I have served on a committee prior to this, the Manufactured Dwelling Standard Committee, 1995, 2002, 2010. I enjoyed participating in that and being part of that. Saw a need to be there, and I see a need to be part of this committee also for our industry and for, you know, my part, and really look forward to it and appreciate you guys' consideration.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions for these good folks? Okay, well, thank you very much for bringing your, I don't know if it's 70-some or 80-some years of experience in the industry, but we're really glad that you're willing to lend it to this important board. And I will close, thank you, and we'll be acting on all these appointments together. I'll close this public hearing, and we will shortly be ready to act. Okay, I will open a work session, and the chair will move the following appointments and reappointments to the following boards and commissions to the Senate floor with the recommendation that they be confirmed en bloc. Jennifer Kleski and Michelle Vlash-Ing to the Commission on Asian Affairs, Mary Stern to the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, Glenda Waddle to the Electrical and Elevator Board, Ken Allen, Terry Andrews, Elizabeth Baxter, George Brown, Aaliyah Christofferson, Dr. Bruce Goldberg, Jose Gonzalez, Teresa Miller, and Gretchen Peterson to the Oregon Health Exchange Corporation, Carlos Perez and Santiago Ventura to the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Susan Hathaway Markser to the Trustees of the State Library, Dr. Alan Hedges to the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery, Dr. Sheila Myers to the Oregon Board of Naturopathic Physicians, Jeremiah Stromberg to the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision, Tanya Hollig, Jan Lewis, and Rick Torgerson to the Residential and Manufactured Structures Board. So that is the motion. Is there any discussion on the motion, members? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. And I will close this work session unless somebody else has a burning desire to carry these. The chair will volunteer because I think it's your turn in the barrel. And this floor session, as you recall, is at 4:30 this afternoon. So be there or be square. With nothing further to come before us, we are adjourned. Nice.